Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon.
Alan Williams, too. Like, he's 25 and he tore up his knee, but when he actually played 2 years ago, he was actually decent.
Yeah, I'm surprised more teams aren't willing to bite on him. I'd give him the bet.
He's a new big baby. He can play center in some spots. He can score.
He can play like 10 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Easily.
Oh my god.
Why not?
LeBrian Nash.
Greatest name ever.
What a name. Who are you?
Yeah, what? Overnamed that guy. They knew he was going to make some money in the NBA someday.
He would be named after one of these players. But not LeBrian. You know, LeBrian.
That's kind of like that's disappointing.
Yeah, come on, Ma. Stop it up.
Yeah, she fucked up.
Ooh, Chinenu Onwuaku.
He's a free agent?
Yep.
Yeah, that's the free throw guy.
Oh, the underhander?
Yeah.
Ooh, George Papagiannis.
Drafted in the first round 3 years ago to add to the NBA that quick. Crazy.
Adrian Payne.
Oh, God.
Yo, this should be part of it.
What?
Just naming off guys and be like, holy fuck, that's awful. Why do you keep bringing this guy up?
I think people are going to stop listening after the second name.
What's up, everyone? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter, and today I'm joined by my main man, Josh Cohen, coming out of Barhaven.
Working here on a minimum contract, just like Melo.
Ooh, big shots, man. Are you coming off the bench, too?
I might be.
Oh, that's rough, man. You're at home. How can you come off the bench in your own home?
You gotta do what you gotta do to survive and not go to China, right?
yeah, that's it's a little too close to home for you, isn't it? In case you guys couldn't guess it, we're going to keep it very basic today. We're going to talk about Melo. We're going to finally go back to talking about Dwight. And then we're going to hit some free agents and maybe some breakouts. You know, maybe some guys that will impress us this year. And I guess we'll just start off with Melo, since we've already gone there. He finally signed today with the Rockets. What was it? A 1 year minimum salary?
I believe so, yes.
So what do you think? Do you think Mel's going to start, Josh?
I think if they already discussed it, like has been reported the last couple of days, I don't think he's a good value at starter. I think PJ Tucker is a better fit at the four, and he showed that in the playoffs. And I think they're going to start James Ennis at the three. Ooh. Basically another, you know, Trevor Ariza type of clone, but obviously not as good of a shooter. He's a really good defensive player, but he's not quite there in terms of the three ball yet, but... In getting wide open looks from Chris Paul and James Harden, he might, you know, shoot at an average clip this year, which is what Melo's been doing the last 2 years at 36%. So I think Melo might actually end be in the end lineups, but I don't think he's going to start.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't start. He could just tear it up and kill guys off the bench, right? Like, have you come in at, like, I don't know, 5-6 minutes into the game. Then the team puts on their like a couple of bench guys, and then you just start crushing guys inside. It's an easy position for Melo to take advantage of.
Yeah, and for much as Melo's taken in terms of hatred from the media, a couple of like the smarter NBA heads have pointed out that when he was on the floor without Paul George and Russell Westbrook, like he was really good last year. Even it didn't happen too often because they almost always had one of those guys on with him. When he was on the court just with a bunch of, you know, OKC's, you know, I guess you could say scrub lineup. When he got the ball a lot, he became not Melo of Denver, but, you know, Melo of late New York days where he was still isolating at a pretty good clip and hitting, you know, at a pretty good clip in terms of mid-range shots and his three-pointers, so he's not nearly as explosive as he used to be, obviously. He's not the same bully because he can't get to the spots the same way, but I still think he'd be effective, and I think in knowing that he's going to get these spot-up shots from Chris Paul and James Harden versus Russell Westbrook, like, when you know you're actually going to get the ball, it makes a huge difference in terms of your mentality.
You actually get ready for it. Like, as a guy who literally can't dribble very well, like, all I've done for the past few years of playing ball is literally just spot up. You run around, you hit the corners, you hit the wings, and you just get ready to hit the jimmy. That's it. You don't have to do anything else. You don't have to set up for yourself. You just got to stand there and shoot. And it's pretty much what Carmelo did with the Olympics, too. And this is what everyone wanted him to do in OKC, except the issue was that he wasn't guaranteed the ball. Russell Westbrook was guaranteed the ball, and you sort of just assumed that he would be shooting or doing dump-offs to Steven Adams more often than not, right? More than he would give it to Paul George or to Melo to isolate. So of course he would be rusty on that team, but it could be a lot better. I don't know.
To get him at the minimum, too, with having Chris Paul and James Harden around him, like, what's the worst case scenario there? He doesn't play as much as you would think he's going to play and causes an uproar in the locker room. Okay, if that's the case, then you just cut him halfway through the year. It's probably not going to happen that way because he still is, you know, he's not a star,
Carmelo,
obviously.
Man. He's not getting cut. Carmelo.
No, but I mean, if he gets into a D'Antoni and then, you know, him and Chris Paul and James Harden not getting along, it could feasibly happen. It doesn't seem likely, but I could see, you know, them cutting his minutes and then giving it to somebody else.
But who else would you give it to on this team? They're not as deep as they used to be, right? You're going to give it to, like, Ryan Anderson to finally play again?
I mean, during the regular season, it's not a horrible option. Anderson's still a good player, I think. It's just his contract is bloated, obviously, but he still plays well with James Harden, especially, and him and Chris Paul got some chemistry going last year before he got injured, so he's not a terrible option at the four, but he's not really part of what they want to do, and I think that's why they're also going to keep their starting lineup as is with Ennis replacing Trevor Ariza, because they still want to have that defensive identity, and I really don't think they're going to go where a lot of people are thinking they're going to go and, like, turning their team into an offensive scheme type of team where, like, they try to outscore people. I think they're still going to go with defense, and they're still going to try to be Golden State that way, except Melo will, you know, be a spark plug off the bench, and if he doesn't really fit into that lineup in terms of being able to guard switches, then you bring Ennis back in. Even though he's not a guy you really have to guard, at least you have that defensive versatility out there.
What do you think James Ennis shot from three last year?
I know he wasn't very good, but I know he was definitely worse than Melo was. I'm going to say 29%.
Ooh, you thought he was that bad? Oh my God.
I'm going to guess. I actually don't know, but he didn't really shoot a lot either, so.
No, he shot 33% on 3.2 attempts.
That's not
horrible.
Or wait,
no, sorry, 2.1 attempts, even less than 3.2.
Well, I can say, without a shadow of a doubt, that is better than Russell Westbrook.
That's harsh.
And DeMar DeRozan, but it's the truth.
Okay. I mean, just because he shoots a better percentage doesn't mean he's, like, you know, more valuable of a shooter.
No, but at the same time, he doesn't have to be. He just has to be a guy who stands in the corner, and that's his only role, and, you know, get rebounds on defense, guard the other team's best player, and play 20 to 25 minutes a game, I would say.
You essentially want him to be like what Rajah Bell used to be for the Suns. Stand there, hit open shots in the corners, and then play really good defense on perimeter players.
Yeah, just annoy the hell out of people. And he's really long, too, so I don't see a reason why he can't fit in that system, especially because he's not really asked to do a whole hell of a lot. It's sort of like what Mbamute went through until he got injured last year. He was really, really good on defense, and he knew where to be on the floor, and even though he's not a great shooter, they left him wide open, and he shot a pretty good clip during the regular season until he, you know, tore his shoulders up. So
in the final minutes of a game, you have Chris Paul, you have James Harden, and you have Carmelo Anthony on your team. Who do you think takes the last shots?
Well, Melo's not even in the discussion, unless he's wide open. You're not going to give it to him unless, like...
You don't think Melo will just force himself to isolate? This is Melo, man.
That's not how Houston plays. Houston runs pick and roll every single play, so unless you get a switch to where, like, you have a point guard on him, then you might consider it, but...
Not down the stretch, though. Down the stretch, every team plays iso ball. Let's be real here.
Yeah, but you have Chris Paul and James Harden, so why would you ever give it to Melo?
Because it's Melo. You got to feed the ego, man.
That's the one problem with Melo. If he plays like that, then he's definitely not going to play down the stretch, especially against Golden State.
Yo, imagine getting sat. Being Carmelo Anthony, getting sat down the stretch for James Ennis or Ryan Anderson. What a blow to your ego that would be.
Well, that's what happened last year in the playoffs against Utah, where he shot 21% from three throughout the series, and he shot 35% overall, I believe. And Jeremy Grant played over him, and he was a huge plus in the minutes that he played. Melo tried to get back in the game. He was like arguing with Maurice Cheeks on the bench to get him back in game four, I think it was. And he was terrible during that game. And he sat out the entire fourth quarter, and they didn't put him back in. So I could see the exact same thing happening. And that's the other thing we haven't discussed yet is the angle of, you know, Mike D'Antoni and his relationship together. And those two guys in New York obviously didn't work out when, you know, he came back from injury when Linsanity was happening. And he turned it back into Carmelo ISO ball, and Linsanity ended really quickly. And they could have gone places if he accepted that, you know, he wasn't going to be the second option necessarily. But if they ran more things through Jeremy Lin, who knows? Maybe they would have won around that year. But obviously he didn't accept what was happening at the time.
He would have been 1A for sure.
Yeah, you would assume so. But Jeremy Lin was damn good in those
4 weeks. 2-3 weeks at most. It wasn't enough to carry him into the playoffs because he got hurt too.
Yeah, sometimes you got to ride the wave of miracles.
Yeah, I guess so. That's a nice way to put it. Oh, man. I really hope Carmelo turns it around this year. I used to love Carmelo back in Denver, man. Even in those first couple of years in New York, like, that dude could ball. You know when someone talks about, like, say a guy like Chris Webber or Rasheed Wallace, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, you know, these guys came, like, 5 years too early for their like career. They could have been so much better if they'd come in 5 years later with all ball movement and that kind of stuff. Carmelo Anthony is the exact opposite. If Carmelo Anthony came into the league in the late 90s, yo, he would have been a beast.
He basically would have been Dominique Wilkins in terms of just being a scorer out there. Not like necessarily athletic type of ability, but just being able to put up numbers.
Yeah, and he would have crushed guys. Mel is one of like the best one-on-one scorers ever.
Yeah, for sure.
What a shame, man. I really hope he turns it around.
But I think he will. I think ultimately this is his last shot in terms of playing productive minutes for a winning team. So if he doesn't really succeed in this role to where all he has to do is really shoot wide open three-point shots, and he's been good at that throughout his career, if he just accepts that and rebounds a little bit and plays a little bit of defense, like, I think he'll be able to get another 1 or 2 year deal at a, not like a huge number, but at least he'll stay in the league. Sort of like what Wade is going through right now. I think Wade can easily stay in the league right now, but it's a matter of if China is going to offer him more money, which is what Melo might be facing next offseason if he doesn't play that well this year.
Man, that'd be so weird to see both of them going to China in the same year.
If you get offered $10+ million in China, whatever they're offering him, then why not, right?
It's true.
Plus, there's so many endorsement deals that could be had, too, and the possibilities of getting a statue like Marbury.
No, it's too late for them. Let's be real here. Come on. Marbury went in, like, when he was, what, 28, 29?
Yeah, it feels like he was around 30, and Melo's obviously 34, Wade's 35, I believe.
These guys are way too old to be going.
And I don't know. They could play into their 40s. If you play like 5 or 6 years, win a couple championships, then why not? It's going to be easier for them to play in China, too, so they could play a lot longer.
Yeah, I guess. T-Mac played when he was in his mid to late 30s, so I guess anyone can.
And Wilson Chandler played there, too, during the lockout offseason, and he averaged like 40 points a game. So.
It's because Wilson Chandler is a great player.
Yeah, goat.
Yeah, pretty much. You know who used to be a goat? Well, I don't know if you can say used to, but.
Defensive goat.
A defensive goat? Wow, Dwight Howard, what a drop-off, man. We've been teasing this for like a couple of weeks now, but he finally made it to somewhere he could actually possibly win, I guess? Signed in, he got bought out by the Nets earlier this year during this offseason, and now signed a 2-year deal with the Wizards for 10.94, so almost $11 million for Dwight Howard. After John Wall chased Marcin Gortat right out of the locker room.
Yeah, this team, it sort of reminds me of the old Trailblazers, the Jailblazers, in that you have a bunch of guys who just, what's that?
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah, like you just have a bunch of guys who don't really seem like they're going to like each other very much, and two guys that obviously don't like each other that much, or haven't in the past anyway, in John Wall and Bradley Beal. And then you got Markieff Morris, who likes to hit people in his offseason. Dwight Howard, who always leaves. Like, whenever he leaves a place, they're so happy that he's finally left, and they don't have to deal with him in the locker room anymore.
It's so weird How is it three teams in a row that have been so happy to see you leave? Like, it's pitiful.
Yeah. From Houston, yeah, he always leaves the situation a lot worse than when he came in. So, especially in LA, everyone expected that team to be a, like the first super team, like the real, real super team with having, you know, five Hall of Famers. But I don't know, it just didn't work out.
Yeah, LA to Houston, people were happy to see him leave. Atlanta, the team literally cheered, and Charlotte couldn't have been happier to see him go this summer also. And Brooklyn didn't even entertain it; they cut his ass so quickly. Like, what's wrong with this guy? Like, what's the deal? Is he just too chill? Is he too much of a clown?
No, Dwight, he reminds me of that guy in high school who was, like, super popular but super insecure. And he would always make it seem like he's your friend. He's talking, you know, he's really nice to you. He's really friendly. And then behind your back, he would just trash you. And you knew he was doing it. And he would still come up to you and pretend like there's no problem at all. And he still speaks so friendly to you, but even still, you're just like, is this guy serious right now? I know you're talking crap to me behind my back to all these, you know, pretty girls I'm trying to get at, and yet, here you are.
You got experience, huh?
Oh, yeah, a little bit.
Something a little salty over here, man.
I had a couple of Dwights in my day. They're Jesus. All pricks.
Kevin.
Whoa.
Oh, shots.
That's what you get for not being on the pod, Kevin.
Truth. Yeah, I feel you. He does seem like a backstabber. But like, why though? I don't understand. I don't, like, this doesn't make any sense. He used to be so good. He carried a team literally to the finals on his back, which could have possibly broken his back in hindsight now. Like, it's just so strange that someone with such talent literally dropped off so hard. And now, don't get me wrong, he still gets like double doubles every year. Right? He still gets his, like, what, 20 and 12, roughly?
No, he was 15 and 12 last year, but even still, like you said, it's just empty stats. I think on the court, the reason why he's nowhere near as good as his Orlando days is because of that back injury that he had in L.A., but in terms of the off-the-court stuff, he just seems like the most fake person. I mean, even his early days, when he was making tons of money and winning Defensive Player of the Year awards, he was supposed to be this, like, huge, devout Christian, and then you hear about these reports where he's knocked up, like, 10 strippers, and he has, like, 20 kids off the court, and he's paying, like, an insane amount of alimony. Like, the guy just seems so fake.
Yeah, it's a damn shame. And then, oh, I'm sure you heard on, which was it, on the Back to Back podcast when Tom Haberstroh was talking about Dwight coming into Charlotte last year, like, narrating his own quote-unquote victory speech, or, like, that's what I'm looking for. Like a celebration, I guess, like after they won the championship. Basically cheering himself on as if he was going to bring Charlotte the championship last year. Like, are you out of your mind? What's up with this guy, man?
Literally. He's just not somebody who fits into a team culture, especially somebody who still thinks he's going to be the star, which if he thinks that's going to be the case this year, which with reports that just came out the last couple of days and him saying that he wants to morph into a, you know, an AD and Kevin Durant type of clone and change his game entirely at age 31 or 32, whatever he is now.
God.
Like, you can't change your game when you're in the twilight of your career. And you just have to accept a role. And if he did that, he would make a lot more money.
I am sure that John Wall wants you to push the ball up the court on your own.
Yeah. Like,
are you serious? You're playing with one of the best point guards in the league, and you think you're going to be more of a playmaker? Or a shooter?
And
come on.
Honestly, if you look at it, and if you look at a comparison between him and DeAndre Jordan, DeAndre is 30 years old, Dwight's 31 or 32, and you said if Dwight Howard accepted that role of being a rim runner, a guy who sets picks and rolls to the basket.
He's so good.
Yeah, I mean, like, he would be a better player than DeAndre Jordan, but who would you choose right now? You choose DeAndre Jordan because A, he's better for the culture, and B, he's just a better player right now because he accepts who he is.
Yeah, man, what a shame. This guy, what a clown. Yo, so I'm on Basketball Reference's page for Dwight Howard, and you know how at the top they have their nicknames listed out? Dwight Howard has three nicknames. What do you think they are?
Fake ass. light.
Light?
And, yeah, light. It's just...
Like Shaq Light?
Maybe. Fake Superman.
Yeah. Superman, D12, obviously. And this last one I've never heard before. The Daily Double-Double. Or, sorry, the Daily Double. Not Double-Double. Just the Daily Double. What? Is this one of those, like, self-proclaimed nicknames? Because you can't do that. My man, you should never be giving yourself a nickname, especially with how much of a clown you are.
Dwight's the type of guy to go on his own Wikipedia page and change his nicknames.
They call me the Big Sexy.
Seriously, I can see, like, I didn't like it when it was happening, but I can see why Shaq just tore into him for so many years on TNT.
What we have now, we have centers that are going to the European style, which is a lot of pick and roll. So Dwight Howard, who's a pick and roll player, you know, some people say he's the best. But me, being an old school big man, I'm going to go with Robin Lopez and Andrew Bynum because they play with their back to the basket.
Brooke Lopez or Robin?
Brooke. Same thing. They're twins. They're brothers. Same things.
Oh, okay. McCall, this is Brooke telling me.
Brooke can't believe you said his name over the White House.
Which one? Listen, man.
Shout out Brooke than Dwight.
Listen. Listen.
I'm listening.
I'm not talking about dunking. I'm talking about playing like a big man with the moves. My man, before he had the foot injury, he was putting up nice, solid big man numbers. He don't have a lot of flash, a la Tim Duncan, but he can play. If you put him with a nice team around him, you can get a lot from this big man. Like, if you want to go to flash and dunking and pick and roll, you got to go with Dwight Howard. But me, being a true original, the last Dundada of all big men.
Dundada.
I'm going with Andrew Bynum and
Son of Jarrell.
It's Brooke.
Brooke Lopez.
I mean, if it was anybody else, they would have taken it a different way and changed their game for the better. And Dwight just always tried to be what Shaq was. He was just so egomaniacal and just tried to morph his game into being one of the best players of all time. And he clearly just was never that. He wasn't that skilled. He was skilled, but he wasn't that level.
He wanted to be one of the best post-up players of all time, which is where it all went wrong.
And he still thinks he is, and yet he's in like the lower, I think, quarter in terms of players who had enough post-ups to actually, qualify for that title. And just he's shooting like 30% on post-ups. Like, at some point, you just have to say to yourself, this is not it.
Yeah.
This is not how I'm getting paid. Like, if you want to get paid $10+ million a year, just do what you're good at.
Yeah, pretty much.
But so many players in the league don't get.
Literally just run the pick and roll. And now that you have one of the best point guards for pick and rolls in the league, dude, you got to milk it this year. Because Gortat made a killing the last 2 years off of John Wall pick and rolls. And Dwight Howard better follow suit, because otherwise, man, he could be out of the league, or if not, probably not out of the league, but really relegated.
Yeah, and in the best case scenario, this team could actually be a top three seed if everyone accepted their role, but you have four guys, I would say, in the starting five who think they're way better than they are. I think Otto Porter is the only guy that really plays his role well. He's a really good player.
I was going to ask you, who's the one guy who thinks he's not too good?
I think Markieff Morris may end up out of the starting lineup just because he's not going to get enough touches, so it might be better just to come off the bench and just have somebody else start in that spot or just go really small.
Yo, Markieff Morris would be better off the bench. Sort of similar to Carmelo, where he can just body guys inside. And he's a good player, man. I love Markieff Morris.
I agree. He's a solid player, and he's a pretty good defensive player, too, when he tries. Yeah. You just have a lot of guys that just turn it off when they're not really getting what they want to get on the court, getting the ball as much as they want to get. So, I don't know. I just don't really like the makeup of this team. Like, the talent is there, obviously, but the makeup, I don't know.
Let's move on. We're going to talk about our breakout players for this year, guys that we expect to make that next jump. Maybe just because of minutes, maybe because of the situation that they're in, change of coaching, whatever. Who do you have first on your list? Who's going to be your best breakout player, Josh?
In terms of best breakout player, I mean, I don't want to pick a second-year player, but I guess I have to in this context. Ooh. I'm going to go with Markelle Fultz. I think he showed a lot of things in the second half of the season, despite not having a jump shot. And supposedly he's worked with Drew Hanlon, who's one of the top NBA trainers, and he's doing really well in the offseason, according to Hanlon. His jump shot has been recreated and readjusted, and now he can shoot three-pointers. So if that's the case, with his talent level off the dribble and his defensive presence, which he was actually pretty good on defense as a rookie, I think that he's going to have a huge breakout year in a situation where he should get a lot of minutes.
I want to know how his shoulder is going to react. I know we already had this discussion where it's like, oh yeah, it was just the yips, but there was something really off about your shot. You don't change your shooting form just because you're nervous or because you're shook on the floor or because the moment is too big for you. You know what I mean? Like, this guy was the number one pick. He was a star in Washington State. And there's no reason that he would have changed his shot so much that he couldn't shoot free throws. That's the part that really worries me about him.
Yeah, obviously the mental aspect may not quite still be there, but that's yet to be seen, obviously. But if he has overcome that, he has all the talent in the world, and I don't see why he can't be a breakout player going into next season.
I hope so. For Philly's sake, I really hope so, because if he does, they're going to be such a monster next year.
Yeah, and just with that addition alone, I mean, even though they didn't really add any like huge free agents, if they add him as a guy...
Hey, they added somebody, okay.
I said free agents. I didn't say trades.
True.
I know your boy Wilson will get his own podcast soon.
No.
But, I mean, adding him to the lineup at a 30 minutes per game, I think that he's going to be a huge addition. And honestly, if his game is where it was in college to where he could take guys off the dribble, shoot pull-up threes and pull-up shots off the dribble on pick and roll, he's basically the perfect third star with those two guys, with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid.
Yeah, man, that'd be crazy. I went a little bit different from you with my top breakout guy. It was more of a real project, to be honest, because he's been in the league for a few years and hasn't really amounted to where we thought he would be. But I got Mario Hezonja. Recently signed with the Knicks for, I think $7 or $8 million a year. He's one of those guys that came out of Europe, had so much potential, could see the floor really well, was a great shooter, decent defender because he's long, he's big, and he just didn't really get I'm going to say he didn't get a chance in Orlando, and I hope that's true, because he never really did that much in his 2 or 3 years there.
Yeah, and when he got a chance to play last year, he actually played pretty well, and I think the main difference last year was that he played at the 4 instead of the 3. So I think he had some issues in terms of getting by guys on the perimeter with his quickness. But I think at the 4, even though he's 6'7", 6'8", he just played a lot better because he was able to either shoot the wide open 3-point shot or just get by guys who, were a little bit bigger and not as mobile at that position. But I had him on my list as well. And the one thing I like about him more than a lot of these guys on the list is that he has what us Jewish people refer to as a chutzpah. That he's got balls,
Oh, my God.
He's got confidence in himself. And I think that if he does start at the 4 this year, Porzingis out for a while, I think that, like you said, in that market, if he, shows well and the New York fans get behind him, that confidence is going to hold to a whole other level. And he could, like you said, be one of the breakout stars next year.
His own Yanity?
Hey, it could work.
Hey, yeah, kind of.
Super Mario.
Bang. I see so much potential in this dude, and he's still only 22. He's played 3 years. He's 6'8" as a small forward, which is a perfect size, and he's long. I love it, man. There's still so much there. Like you said, he's got real cojones, and that's what you really want in a guy going to New York.
And I know that he hasn't shown it yet, but I think that eventually, in his prime, he's going to be one of those guys in the playoffs. And you need these types of guys in your team that will just take the shot and not have, any qualms about, hesitating, He's just going to be one of those guys that if the ball comes to him and he's open, he's going to shoot it. He doesn't have any fear. So, and I think he's a good enough shooter to where he's going to be able to stick around in the NBA for a long time. And if he gets his game together, he could be not a star player, but, a guy that could potentially start and get big minutes on your team.
Yeah. I mean, do you think he's going to start this year?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Bench? I think he's going to start with Porzingis out, and then once Porzingis comes back, then he might come off the bench, because I don't think he hasn't really shown much of the three yet, but it's a possibility he also plays at the three, because they don't really have a lot there either besides a rookie, but I think he's going to start at the 4.
I hope so. I really hope he really excels, because this dude, I don't know, I've been stressing this a lot, but the potential is all there, and he's still so young. He's still got so much potential, and Coach Fizdale is great for young players. You know what I mean? Like, he's one of those guys who tries to develop his young players rather than just, being like Thibodeau, where you just constantly play your starters and your vets down to the ground. So I think he's got a lot of potential, and I could really see him breaking out this year. And hopefully he gets paid. 6.5 this year isn't enough. Maybe he'll make more next year.
I hope so. And as we, you know, we've obviously been on the Mario train, but he hasn't shown too much in his first 3 years in the NBA. But, you know, hopefully in the New York market, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
He'll make it, man. I believe.
I do too.
Who do you got next?
Next, I'm going to go to Atlanta. Ooh. And I'm going to talk about Taurean Prince.
Oh, okay.
You go up and grab the ball off the rim when it comes off, and then you grab it with two hands. You come down with it, and that's considered a rebound. So they got more of those than we did.
He's going into his third year. Yeah, I mean, he's going to his third year. Last year, he had a really good season, even though most people didn't see it because he plays in Atlanta. But he's your prototypical 3-and-D guy, and he showed a lot more off the dribble last year, which is something that most people didn't expect with him coming out of college. They expect him to be like a 3-and-D type of wing, but he has shown more in the pick-and-roll and off the dribble game in terms of his pull-up shooting. And he's really good on defense, and even though, you know, that team isn't going anywhere next year, I think that he's going to show that he's the best player on that team next year. Despite having Trae Young and John Collins on the team, I think that he's going to be the guy next year that possibly averages 17 to 19 points a game on pretty decent efficiency. I think he's actually a really good player.
Best player aside from Vince Carter.
Oh, sorry. Obviously. The unsigned Vince Carter. Yeah.
You're right, man. Last year, he played all 82 games, averaged 14 points, which is really impressive for a second-year player with a garbage-ass lineup. Got 4.7 boards, and he was one of those, like, all-around players. You know what I mean? Like, I had him on my fantasy team for a while, so I obviously tracked his stats a little bit more. But I was constantly surprised by, like, you know, he had, like, an 18-9 game with, like, two blocks and two steals kind of thing. Very, like, Kirilenko-esque, to be honest. But just younger and obviously less, with less experience. But he's really going in the right direction. He's developing all the right tools from his rookie year to his second year. His shot got better. He learned how to rebound properly, so he boxed out properly. And he's playing really good defense. And you're right, he is the best player on the team. Trae Young is obviously not the best player. John Collins, yeah, probably, maybe. 1A, 1B kind of situation, but Taurean Prince has a lot of potential. You're great call with that one.
Yeah, and I think that last year, once they went into tank mode and they stopped playing Schroeder and Bazemore and they let Taurean Prince be the primary guy, I think that's one thing that all young players sort of need, and getting that chance to be like the primary guy in a team, especially if it's a really bad team, to where they can get reps and improve their game with experience versus just, you know, learning from the bench. So I think, like, with the last two players you've mentioned, with Hezonja and Prince, both of those guys should be getting a lot of minutes and a lot of opportunities, which should help them later down the line once they actually get in their primes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go, because they'll have all the opportunity in the world. But similar to him, I have a guy going into his third year as well, and Chris Dunn out in Chicago. He's a young point guard, obviously, but, you know, he's super explosive, came into the league as... like one of the best point guards in his draft. Last year had 13 points a game, 6 assists a game in Chicago. So he's young and up and coming. He's learning how to shoot better every year. And he's, you know, a defensive monster. He's long. You know me, man. I love my long, lengthy guys. And he's there.
Pause.
no pause. We're just rolling with it. But I like it. I think he's got a lot of potential. I don't think... there's many of the point guards on the team. It's all his.
That's true, but at the same time, they have a lot of guys that need to handle the ball on that team, with Zach LaVine and Jabari, and Lauri Markkanen needs the shots as well. So yeah, I like Dunn too.
They'll shoot. They're just going to shoot. Jabari's going to do a lot of his back doors or get his corner threes. Markkanen is just going to shoot from wherever he gets the ball, because that's what he does. And LaVine will... Well, Levine's a Seattle player, man. He's going to dribble a lot and then take his J. But you just got to deal with it.
I think in a perfect world, your scenario might work out. But with Jabari and Levine especially, like, those guys are going to need the ball a lot. So even though I like Dunn and I like his improvements from last year, he obviously came in as a guy who a lot of people expected to be like a D-Wade light, because he had the same sort of body, quickness, moves around the basket. But under Tom Thibodeau, he didn't really excel because he didn't play as much as he should have. He didn't really handle the ball as much as he should have. But last year he showed a lot of good things off the pick and roll, especially, and his defense is obviously, it's not top notch, but it's pretty good for a young player.
It's solid.
And he has all the tools to be elite at that. So at least he has the one near elite skill, and off the dribble, he's, you know, he's a pretty good finisher around the basket. He's decent around the basket, but he could get a lot better there. And his shot is obviously the biggest thing that is separating him from becoming like a top 15 point guard, because he's probably in the, you know, the bottom 10 right now in terms of starting guards. But again, he's only in his third year, and he could improve a lot in, coming up next season.
Let's go, Chris Dunn, the lesser known KD. All right, who you got? Who's your number three?
This guy, I, again, I'm going back to another second year player.
Oh, but my this God. Guy, come on, man.
Without a shadow of a doubt, I know that he's going to break out next year. And that's Jared Allen for Brooklyn.
Oh, okay. I see you.
He's going to get a ton of minutes on that team. They obviously signed Ed Davis as well. He's going to play backup five, but he's a guy that got a lot of minutes in the second half of the season. And he was really, really good last year. And he just, he understood his role and he played within it. And he just did whatever the team asked him to do. That's why he ended up getting a lot more minutes as the season went on last year. And he's a really good finisher at the basket. He's super athletic. He rebounds, he blocks shots, and he just plays smart, which is something you don't really see from rookie centers. Most centers take, you know, 3 to 5 years to develop, but last year he showed a lot of good signs on both sides of the ball in terms of, you know, just understanding the concepts of what he was able to do out there.
My only issue with it now is that he's got D'Angelo Russell coming back, which is the primary issue. Last year he prospered a lot when it was him and Spencer Dinwiddie, to be honest. Because Dinwiddie is the kind of point guard who would pass first. But Russell's a chucker. And I don't know how he's going to do with a primary chucker on the team, because he actually tailed off towards the end of last year. That would be my main concern about him going forward. But if he can get the ball, if they run pick and rolls for him properly, this kid's got a lot of potential, because he can fly.
Yeah, and the one promising sign in terms of that team itself is that their coach, Coach Atkinson, only plays the guys that are playing well, and he doesn't really play anybody over 30 minutes a game, usually. Even D'Angelo Russell last year, I think, averaged under 30 minutes a game, and a lot of those minutes went towards, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie when he was playing well. So Allen getting a lot of minutes throughout the year just showed that, you know, despite being a rookie, he, again, just followed the game plan and did whatever was asked by the coach. And again, he has a lot of skill, like you said, in terms of, you know, just being super athletic and having good touch on his shot. And his timing on his block shots is really good as well. And even though he got overpowered a lot last year, he needs to gain weight, obviously.
That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's to be expected as a rookie. But he doesn't really get too high or too low too. Like, his emotional state is actually pretty good, which is something that you need from your defensive anchor. You can't have a Dwight Howard out there. So
that's why they waived him. Bang.
And yeah. And honestly, like, he got dunked on a lot last year. And despite that, he still went up and tried to block shots, which is something that you don't see from a lot of young players. A lot of young players just let guys go by them. So that's something that's encouraging too.
Yeah. He's a ballsy dude. I totally see it. I love it. All right, I'm going west with this one, man. I'm going to take Nerlens Noel in OKC. Last year, we obviously only knew him because he broke his thumb and ate hot dogs during halftime in the Mavericks arena. But this dude coming out of college was, you know, we remember this is when Philly started their tank job and traded Jrue Holiday for him. He had so much potential coming out of college. And, you know, the first year he had in Philly was pretty decent. He's still an athletic dude. He's got great defensive instincts, if you will. And I think in OKC, he'll finally just maybe not have a constant 25 minutes a game, but he'll learn from good players. He's going to learn from Steven Adams, and he has no other option to. He'll also learn from Patrick Patterson, who's just a savvy veteran player.
See, he has another option. I could see him just getting cut. Like, I like the idea of Nerlens Noel, and he has shown. Yeah,
Noel Island, baby.
I think I left last year. I was on his island, but I don't think he's getting enough opportunity next year, because I think Adams is going to play his usual 32 to 34 minutes a game. And even though Noel should fit in that lineup with Jeremy Grant coming off the bench and just being, you know, super freaks just coming in and just being, you know, supremely athletic and just changing the game in terms of the speed of the game when he comes in the game. I don't know. He's really immature, and all the off season stories you hear about him, like trashing houses and smoking tons and tons of weed. Like, I don't know. I think he has a lot of mental hurdles that he has to get over in order to reach his peak level, which he could be. Yeah. Like, he's honestly what Jared Allen is right now. Like, he could be that type of player if he put his mind to it, but I'm not sure if his immaturity issues are going to, you know, stall his career.
Yeah, I guess so. I think it's also dependent on, like, the culture of the team, right? Like, in Dallas, he wasn't really held accountable to anyone except for Carlisle. Because none of the other players were like, old vets except for Dirk and, like, Devin Harris or J.J. Barea. But you're not going to listen to J.J. Barea if you're, like, 7 feet tall. Dirk is, like, the only guy, and Dirk's at the end of his career. But I think going to OKC where you have guys like Paul George, Russell Westbrook, even Andre Roberson, you know, guys who are proven in the league, who are still relevant in the league, I think that's what you need for a guy like Noel. Someone to really just be like, yo, stop messing around here. This is us. This is what we do. This is a job. Stop screwing around. And I think he's going to get it.
Yeah, and the one positive aspect from that team, too, in terms of comparing his talent level and fit with that team, is that athletic freaks who play defense fit well with Russell Westbrook. So Andre Roberson, Jerami Grant, now Nerlens Noel, and just like a guy who can finish, you know? Like, Russell Westbrook's best fit maybe in the NBA is Steven Adams. And that's a guy who can just pick and roll to the basket, catch easy passes, and just lay it up or dunk it. And that's what Noel should do well. But, you know, getting back to the players we talked about before, oftentimes on pick and rolls, like, Noel tries to just do too much and look too fancy and tries to make, you know, crazy passes off the pick and roll instead of just going up and trying to dunk on people. So, I don't know. I think it could work out well, like, with them just being a defensive stalwart, which is something we talked about last podcast. And, like, Hugo said that he wasn't really a believer in OKC, but with that defensive versatility, if he actually does work out, their starting five was the best defensive unit in the league last year when they played. And then if you have him and Grant coming off the bench, too, and just speeding up the game and just getting steals and just getting out on the break, that team could be really good next year.
They're going to be fun, man. It's going to be so fun.
Who's
your fourth player?
I'm going to go with Jamal Murray, another guy we've talked about going into his third year, I believe, Canadian. And he made a lot of strides last year, especially with his, his jump shooting, especially. He made a big stride there and just becoming, he didn't really become the man on that team last year, but honestly, in game 82, when, you know, the game was on the line, they went to him every single possession instead of Jokic, because Jokic was getting shut down by Taj Gibson late in that game. And he was making shots, and I think that he's going to be the 1A, or the 1B on this team. But in crunch time, I think he's going to be the guy this year, and that won't be any question.
Yeah, I think that's actually really beneficial to him that Paul Millsap was hurt for the majority of last year. Just for his own, like, his own offensive development. You know what I mean? Otherwise, I think it would have gone to Millsap a lot down the stretch, but instead it was, well, you know, who else are we going to go to? We're going to go to Murray or Will Barton. And Murray was always on the floor down the stretch. He started games. He secured his starting position over Jameer Nelson and just, you know, told the league that I'm here. I'm going to get buckets. I'm not a good defender, but I'm here.
And it just seems like he has that killer instinct, the killer quality that you need in a point guard down the stretch of games. And he showed that first, like when I first started watching him, it was in the qualifying rounds for the Olympics. I think when he was 16 or 17.
And
I think Corey Joseph started, but he was a guy that was taking a majority of the shots when it mattered.
Yeah. He was the star.
And just goes to show. Yeah, he averaged the most points in that team, I believe, too. And, Denver's going to score a ton of points next year, but I think that he's going to be the lead guard, obviously. And Isaiah Thomas is going to try to take that away from him, I think, but that's
Isaiah,
not going
to
happen.
Know your role, man. Know your role. You're there to support, not be the guy.
But, yeah, I could definitely see Murray becoming a top 15 point guard as early as next year. I don't see any reason why he couldn't be.
This is music to my ears, baby. I love it. All right, I'm going to go to New Orleans with my last pick. Can you guess who I'm going to take?
I'm going to say Julius Randle.
Ding, ding, ding. My man's out here coming out from L.A. He's got all the tools to be a good offensive player, and he rotates well on defense. He's a good position defender. He's got a good jump shot. He can body inside with anyone else, basically. He's a big dude, and he's really mature. I remember listening to his podcast with, I want to say it was Woj, like earlier last year. And I was like, man, this is like, he's just got his head on straight. Like, he knows this is a job. He's coming into it like a professional. And I just really believe it. I think him, AD, and Mirotić are going to make a hell of a front court next year.
Yeah, I agree. I think that those three guys together, as well as I like Cheick Diallo as well. So I think those four guys playing the majority of the minutes at the four and the five are going to be one of the best front courts in the NBA. But I think that Julius Randle sort of has to change his game a little bit to play with AD, and that he's not going to get the ball as much as he did last year. But if he's a guy who just stays on the offensive glass and tries to finish everything around the rim instead of just being more of a, you know, ball handler type of big man, which I don't think he's going to be able to do a lot with this team. If he just tries to fit his game around AD, I think that his game is going to go another level, because if he can play those guys together with, you know, the rebounding talent, their talent to be able to switch on the perimeter and, you know, just get out after the ball, I think that they're going to be a tough team to beat in the front court anyway. In the back court, they still have some issues, obviously. But if they can, you know, keep those guys healthy, they should at least be a playoff team next year.
Yo, I found the home for Jamal Crawford. Let's get him to New Orleans.
Yeah, maybe. They need points.
They need points? They need shooting? They need a guy who can handle the rock, because Alfred Payton sucks. Let's go. Jay Crossover, move your way south, man. Go east so you can make... They're not east. Never mind. I take that part back. But that could be
it. Technically. Yeah, I mean, New Orleans is not in a great position in terms of improving now that they've lost Boogie. But this wasn't a bad situation to get Julius Randle at $9 million per year for the next 2 years with a guy who went to Kentucky as well and is very familiar with AD as well. So I don't really see this being a bad fit at all, as long as he, again, fits his game around AD and doesn't try to be the guy.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think he'll be fine, and I think this might be how they try to keep AD around. Well, this is how they try to keep AD around, but I think it might actually work.
Yeah, just fill their team with Kentucky guys.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think my last pick was Bogdan Bogdanović for Sacramento. Ooh,
okay. Tell me why.
I love his game. I mean, he's 25, I believe, right now. So he's going into the prime of his career. And as a rookie last year, even though he was an older rookie, he showed a lot. I mean, he shot 44% from the field, 39% from three as a rookie who was a primary ball handler on that team. And he was much better than, you know, De'Aaron Fox was last year, despite not getting nearly as many touches. And with more talent being infused in that lineup, I think that's only going to make him better. And I think that his game would be more suited to a team that was contending, because he can actually play the NBA game right away, whereas a lot of these guys still have to catch up. But if they make him like the primary ball handler on that team, I think they'll win a few more games next year instead of having him in the shadows with them trying to develop, you know, De'Aaron Fox and Bagley. But, I just think that he's a really solid shooting guard. He really has no weaknesses on offense. Defense, he can obviously improve because he needs to, like other rookies, get in the weight room and, you know, improve his physicality. But on offense, he's a really good pick-and-roll player. He can shoot the three ball with anyone in terms of spot-ups. And he's just an overall good player.
Yeah, he's just nice. That's like, the best way to describe him. He's a nice player. The only issue would be if they put his development on hold for, like you said, Bagley, Fox, Giles. For some reason, I feel like Willie Cauley-Stein needs to be mentioned here as well. But as long as they just got to know who's the best player on the team. And as long as Coach Jaeger understands that, they'll be perfectly fine with him.
Yeah, I mean, I get wanting to, you know, give De'Aaron Fox and Bagley the ball more often and getting them touches to really speed up their development. But at the same time, you already have a gem in Bogdanović, I think, who could be not a star player, but like a level below that and being a quality starter. So I think he's probably the only quality starter they have right now. And it's going to take a while for those other guys to develop into that, probably at least 2 years for most of them. So I think that, again, like you said before, he should be getting the majority of the touches on offense.
Let's go with Coach Yeager. Let's show him who's boss in Sacramento.
Yeah, Vlade's the boss, and he's doing a terrible job.
Oh, man. And with that, I think this is where we're going to call it, man. I don't want to get into Vlade slander here. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Hit us up on the iTunes podcast app. You can find us on Google Play, Stitcher, all of the podcast apps, basically. You know, hit us up Instagram and on Twitter. We're at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.